Soy Power Podcast is a free podcast made possible by the support of our awesome Patreon sponsors. Head to toypowerpodcast.com and see how you can help.
Oh yeah, this is power.
Hello and welcome to Toy Power, the podcast where we talk toys and everything pop culture. I'm Trent and it's great to have your company today for episode
79.
This week on Toy Power, we hit up our modern toy line retrospective on Marvel Legends and then we jump into the Toy Power quiz. Today in the Toy Power studio, I've got Frank.
Hello.
Darren.
Hello everyone.
Ben.
G'day, g'day.
And very special guest joining us today for the first time, Mr. Sean Fuster. Sean, welcome to Toy Power.
Guys, thank you very much for having me. Hello, listeners.
And we're going to jump straight into our modern toy line retrospective. But before we do that, as we do always on Toy Power, we jump into the Get to Know Sean segment.
I was born in a rural cheese log cabin.
We might get there. But what you have to do for this segment is to answer these questions as if you're 10 years old.
Ooh.
So back into the DeLorean.
All right, excellent.
10 years old, Sean, and see how you go. So first up, what was your favorite toy line when you were 10?
Same answer as it is now, Transformers G1.
Hey, yep. Good man.
Got a lot of fans there on that. Anything in particular that drew your attention to G1?
Yeah, look, I was into a lot of different toy lines as a kid, and it was the 86 Transformers movie that locked me in as a Transformers fan because the series had consequences, characters could die, things could change, and to my writer's brain, that made me go, yes, I want to follow this on. I want to see what happens next.
Nice.
If you're prepared to kill off Optimus Prime, who knows what's going to happen?
Mm. So you were ready into the Game of Thrones kind of mentality.
At the very least, the writer's mentality. I was used to reading Marvel comics where they weren't afraid to make changes and things like that. So to see it in a toy line, I didn't understand that it was just shifting product. I read it as the epic that it was and honed into it.
Yep, very good.
Beautiful.
All right, well, it is a classic movie and maybe you've got the same answer for question two, but favorite movie as a 10-year-old?
Favorite movie as a 10-year-old would have been a tie between the 86 Transformers film and probably the first Back to the Future.
Oh, good call. Very good.
Absolutely loved that film.
I was watching a little bit of that today, the chase sequence where he rips the wooden box off the top of this and makes the skateboard. Well. Yeah, you could probably talk us through it right now.
With the D. James manure truck.
Yeah, that's right. Well, that, and it plays out almost scene for scene in Back to the Future too.
With the hoverboard.
With the hoverboard and the, in the cafe or the diner. But yeah, fantastic movie. And I think we're all pretty big fans of toy time travel. And we probably all wish we could have a time machine, go back to the toy stores and pick up all those items that we'd love to have in our collection. Known.
Just to see John Martin's toy section again.
Yes.
The way it was. Just to see that.
Yeah.
Good call.
That'd be worth it.
Yeah. Yes. Well, Darren's got an idea when he creates his man cave or toy room is to basically replicate that carpet.
Oh.
That sort of...
Just try and pay homage to it in a very specific way.
You might be going to sort of the op shop to find that colour because they might not manufacture it.
But just wish I'd said to David Jones, can you give me the carpet?
Yeah. All right. And final question, your favourite wrestler as a 10-year-old?
Hulk Hogan, hands down. Hands down Hulk Hogan.
It's hard to beat, isn't it?
Yeah. Especially at that age, I was annoyed that they were trying to phase him out in favour of the Ultimate Warrior, and I'm like, I'm not buying this. Not even going there.
Yeah, it's hypercolour, really, for Ultimate Warrior, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's sort of...
My, cousin-in-law, if that's the right word, the guy who ended up marrying my cousin, they went to a fancy dress party and he went as the Ultimate Warrior. And I was the only one who... everyone's like, oh, are you a wrestler? And I'm just like, it's the Ultimate Warrior! And he's like, finally, thank God.
I actually met Hogan a few years back and interviewed him for the newspaper and I was telling him after the interview, how much he'd meant to me growing up as a kid. And I said, I even bought the LJN Hulk Hogan workout set and used it. And he took one look at these skinny little arms and said, do me a favor, brother, never tell anybody that story.
That's gold.
Well, that is fantastic, yeah.
Thanks for sharing it on the podcast.
Yeah, sorry, Hulk.
Well, probably Hulk won't be listening, so. Very good. All right, it's time to get into our toy line retrospective.
Vintage toy line retrospective.
All right. So we're talking today about Marvel Legends. So, look, this is a huge line. I didn't realize how big this was until I started doing the detailed research on it. But Marvel Legends is a line based on characters from the Marvel Universe. And it began back in 2002, really as a bit of a continuation of what was the Spider-Man Classics line. And for the most part, it's scaled in the 6-inch scale, but Marvel Legends has also dabbled in 4-inch, 8-inch, and 12-inch as well. Notably, Ben and Davey were picking up some 12-inch stuff recently at the Toys R Us sales. It's always had a focus on detailed sculpting as well as posability, and it really hit home and became a huge line for collectors. And I would suspect it's one of the most extensive, if not the most extensive, action
in
figure
terms of
line
sheer
of time,
number
in terms
of characters.
Of numbers.
It's got to be like it's gone through a couple of different changes. Obviously, going to Hasbro and sort of rebranding with the return of Marvel Legends. But in terms of sheer, like for a line that's lasted as long as it has, there's only you get the core characters who maybe get redone every let's say 5 years or so. But there's just some characters who, and I consider myself pretty good with my Marvel knowledge, there's some characters I look at and go, I have no idea who that person is. Not a clue. So, yeah, it's pretty incredible.
Yeah. So, originally based on comic book likenesses, the figures later expanded into characters from the Marvel Cinematic Universe, as well as other popular television series that aired on pay TV, etc. This is a really interesting one, and Frank touched on it, but it was originally done by Toy Biz, and then Hasbro picked up the license around 2007, and they continued the line essentially, you know, in scale, in name, with a few sort of changes to things like articulation. I think one of the things they removed was the controversial finger articulation that sort of they gave way to.
Mm.
And those bizarre toe articulations as well.
Yeah.
That was weird.
Yeah.
Who wants articulated toes on an action figure?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can just see them falling right off the shelf.
Maybe Spider-Man, but that's about it.
Yeah, exactly.
Good call.
In terms of packaging, what was happening at the time was a clamshell style of packaging. So basically think all plastic encompassing the figure with an insert.
The first few waves came with comics.
Yeah,
correct.
Yeah, and again, that was a continuation of what Spider-Man Classics had established. So really smart move. I mean, big concept in the 80s to pack in comic books to help build character recognition and understanding. So that might have played a part in kind of the logic of trying to build up people's references to the characters and understanding of the characters.
Well, one of the things that's annoyed Marvel to this day is that it doesn't have the highest selling comic book of all time. It tries to claim that it does with X-Men, but the actual highest selling comic of all time are the Masters of the Universe pack-in toys.
Yeah.
Because there are like 700 million of those in the world. And so that is automatically the number one, and Marvel can't beat that. So maybe that was part of it.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah.
Try and give them away to get the count up.
Absolutely. But I just love that Masters of the Universe is, you know, not even a comic-based line property, you know.
And it's going to hold that forever.
Yeah,
pretty much.
Yeah, I don't think anything will come close to those sort of sales ever again. Today we get the packaging is sort of the window box, and this is really clever, and I think we're seeing a bit of a trend now in terms of that the box that's not a blister stuck onto a card back that you can remove, seal back up if you wanted to, and you wouldn't really damage the packaging. And it's similar to stuff that we're seeing from Hasbro in the Black Series, as well as Mattel in their DC Multiverse Classics style of line as well.
That's both good and bad, and I'm sure we'll touch on it later when you have the Build-A-Figure parts that go missing and then the toy is returned because, oh, look, it's unopened. I'm sure anyone who collects Legends can relate to that.
Yeah. You often see the photos people have taken with... Sometimes they swap out the figure as well.
I've seen all sorts of totally different figures that don't even come close to matching it, but they've just jammed it in that, you know, the plastic that sort of holds it in.
It's a big problem, though. I can remember a supermarket, I won't name it, or the shopping centre, but Trent might remember this, for a very long time, had a Justice League Unlimited card with a Batman the Animated Series poor condition Two-Face in it, and it was just sat there for what seemed like years. They couldn't give it away because everybody knew that's some wrecked from childhood Batman the Animated Series can of Two-Face that you've just stuck on a Justice League Unlimited Mattel card that you're trying to sell us.
Everyone knew except for the returning officer at that particular store.
That's right.
And it's really, I mean, that's the day and age we're living in where this stuff, no one knows what it is. A lot of the people working in the stores probably don't know what it is. The line was reportedly on the brink of cancellation in the late 2000s. And interestingly, from Hasbro, what they did was they reduced production numbers in an attempt to combat the waning sales. And it seems to have broadly worked. Back in 2010 at San Diego Comic Convention, Hasbro said that it was going to be coming back in full force, and it did so from January 2012. It returned strongly back to store shelves. And I think part of that resurgence was, if you think back to when Iron Man came out, 2008, that was, a big impetus to then start doing movie likenesses into absolutely. That, and it's taken off an absolute treat. Does anyone know, I did a check on the number of figures that we've had from 2002 to pretty much currently, what's announced or what's available. Anyone want to take a stab?
The total number of
figures. And so, you know, say there's been 10 different Wolverines, you've got to count all those as a figure.
I'm going to go high 500. Let's
500?
Say.
Darren?
I don't know if I'd be game to guess. I don't know the line as well as I do some lines.
Higher or lower than 500?
I would have thought maybe higher.
Higher?
I mean, we're talking a line that's been going on for what seems like forever. Mm. And I say that in a good way. I mean, it's great that it continues to thrive.
Sean, any idea?
Be around the 750 mark now, wouldn't it?
Yep.
750.
I was going to say 750, so I'll put in 1,000.
Just to cover the spectrum.
High.
Counted it at 860.
Wow.
And that's counting build-a-figures as a figure.
Yeah, sure.
And every exclusive. But that's absolutely massive. And today, Hasbro has started utilizing the face print technology on movie characters. And we're starting to see them come through. And they, you know, from the photos and what you're seeing in packaging now, what they can do at that 1/6 scale is truly amazing now. So this is what was already a seriously impressive collectible line has just gone up to the next level. And I guess like the MCU, there's no end in sight for this line. It's just going to keep powering on where things are at currently. I mean, there could be another 10 years in line. Easily. It could be an evergreen line, sort of like Star Wars today.
The giveaway to me was as part of the promo leading into Infinity War, the tagline that Marvel were throwing around was, you know, Marvel Cinematic Universe, the first 10 years. And I'm like, oh, they've got plans like well beyond.
You can see that a few years before that, actually. I think just the way they started bringing in new leads, you know, we'll talk about it later, but Ant-Man and the Wasp, and you can see that Paul Rudd's Ant-Man is going to be a big part of their future going forward, and you can see that they're replenishing their cast before they've even gone, which I think is just genius in terms of making sure the audience sticks around rather than, okay, you're out now, so we'll bring in a whole bunch of new characters. We're already going to know the replacements and they're going to feel like very well formed, very established characters.
All right, we'll talk to character selection now, and we'll go around the room and everyone can have their say on this. But I guess you don't go for, you know, 16-odd years without some very cleverly planned character selections, some cleverly planned refreshes. So what do we all think of how ToyBiz/Hasbro have approached character selection? Do you feel that you can go out there and get the characters you're after? Do you like the styles that your characters are done in?
Yeah, and that's always, with some of the big ones, your Iron Mans and Caps and stuff, there's lots of different versions. There's, you know, the Secret Wars version of this or the, you know, the 2099 version of that. There's a whole bunch of stuff. I think as far as, I tend to look at it as in a wave and you go, all right, what's jumping out of this wave? And they're actually really good at, more so nowadays, they're really good at having, this wave has Wolverine and Storm and all these big characters that you know, and then they'll throw in like the Prowler or someone at that sort of level who most people are going to go, I don't know who that is. But guess what? If you want to complete the Build-A-Figure, which is usually something like a Hulk or a Sasquatch is one of the current ones, you need them all kind of thing. So they're very clever the way they do that. Probably the one that jumps out to me is Wolverine, because he has so many different outfits in the costume. There's the classic sort of blue and gold. There's the tan and gold. There's, you know, the Days of Future Past. There's Patch with the you know, the eye patch and stuff.
X-Force,
yeah.
Weapon X.
The list goes on. And the annoying thing about it, and I have seen customs where you can change it, is just the claws. And it comes down to a safety thing where there always is really wonky plastic that, you know, just sort of warps over time and stuff. So getting and it'll be interesting to see how the new Wolverine figure that is already out in Canada but should come out here before Christmas, what that looks like in the hand and stuff. But and he was always, I think, also just that little bit shorter than the other characters, which is accurate. So yeah, I'd say Wolverine for me in terms of characters. Yeah, but there's plenty to choose from.
So I've been collecting the Marvel film-based characters in the Marvel Legends line for a few years now and enjoying that. I don't remember ever seeing too much in the X-Men space, though, based on the films, and I would have loved to have seen a Days of Future Past.
That's a good point. This is a fascinating point that you bring up here, and I think this is deliberate. Sean might know some more, but if you think about who holds the license, right, and how that works, you've got 20th Century Fox owning X-Men. You've got Hasbro / Marvel / Disney with really the cinematic universe. And there could be an argument to say, well, Hasbro doesn't want to put out figures that are based upon characters from a competing film franchise. Because in the background,
it would also be a separate license. I imagine it'd have to pay 20th Century Fox a separate license.
Oh, potentially for the likenesses.
Well, it actually gets nastier than that. What happened is Marvel Editorial got an edict from Marvel Corporate before the Disney takeover that said you will not do anything to promote the X-Men. They have to be removed from poster books. They have to be whitewashed out of the wall at Marvel headquarters. Everything. As long as Fox has those rights, you will not do anything to promote X-Men in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
I'm going to say something controversial, but Days of Future Past is my favourite Marvel film of all time.
Get him!
Controversial, I know, but
not a bad film. But geez, all right.
Okay. It just writes everything that's wrong with every previous X-Men film.
Yes,
from the X franchise, it pulls it off nicely. One of the best. Yeah,
to boot. I mean, what's not to like about that?
That's a good flick.
But no, that's a really interesting point, and that's great to get that insight around that edict that's come down. One of the waves, there are a couple of X-Men waves that were released a couple of years back, and my understanding there was the I'm trying to think, you know, Kitty Pryde and Cyclops and
the Juggernaut wave.
And originally that was going to be released at Toys R Us, and then Diamond was going to get a batch that they were going to release through comic book stores, so through previews magazines, and it basically never made it to Diamond. So what I guess should have had better distribution ended up being, you know, for want of a better term, a Toys R Us exclusive, because there was nothing left over, and it's really, really hard to find that line. Yeah. So, yeah, I think X-Men probably has suffered a bit, and if you want a lot of those characters, you might have to go back and collect some of the original stuff, but unfortunately no real movie likenesses unless, you know, you go back to X-Men 1.
I was just going to say X-Men and X-Men 2 lines are really your go-to for that sort of stuff. But for someone like me that would just love a Days of Future Past likeness of core characters, and you know, two different actors play a lot of those characters in there. I don't feel that's been done justice.
I think
Disney 20th Century Fox still goes through.
Yeah, exactly what I was going to say.
I might get my Days of Future Past late.
I think so. Once Disney are making all the profit on those figures, you watch them go back and do an X-Men movie, you know, a couple of waves at least.
And 90s retro is the big thing now. Our generation's retro is out. It's the next generation that's got the disposable income, so they're going to want to hit that X-Men animated series sweet spot, Joe Madureira, Scott Lobdell era comics, trying to get that money now. So it's like, we need the 90s properties now. Give us them.
Definitely.
So character selection, Sean?
From pre-Hasbro, it would be the Mark Texaria-style Black Panther with the golden claws and the long cape.
Yep.
And that was a beautiful, beautiful figure. I only recently picked that up at long last. But what I love about that one is it's actually purple molded plastic with black paint over the top of it. So it gives that incredible Texaria-style paintwork look to it.
Wow. Very clever.
It's gorgeous. Modern era, they finally gave me a Darkhawk. I love Darkhawk. Yes. I am nuts about Darkhawk. Not only did they give me a Darkhawk, It's a beautifully sculpted figure, and his damn epaulets actually move on his shoulders, so he can put his hands all the way up, and he can, you know, head tilts back on a proper ball joint.
Yep.
They thought about it, and it's flipping Darkhawk. There's seven people out there that care about Darkhawk, and yet the figure's perfect.
Just to refresh me, is that the Silverhawk looking
character? That's the one. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and see, that's the thing. People go, oh, Rom with wings or Silverhawk or whatever. Yeah. Like I say, seven people care about that character, and yet they put so much effort into making sure it's right.
Yeah, cool.
It's just amazing.
Cool. Yeah, definitely.
For me, I, you know, I've got to shout out Deadpool and everything from the Toy Biz line, but I'm going to be a little bit different. I've got to give massive, massive respect to what we got with the figures in Toy Biz. I'm talking about the motorbike.
Yes.
You know, buying a motorbike with a full-blown motorbike with Wolverine or Blade or Ghost Rider or whomever. I think
the Avengers Scarlet. Sky Chariot thing with Scarlet Witch.
Scarlet Witch. Yep. And things got a chariot thing. You know, $15, you could buy a figure and a motorbike in you know, yesterday's toy market when they were on toy shelves. Today's market, you pay $90 for a
pretty much,
you know, a motorbike and a
that's what I was looking at. Yeah, the Ghost Rider,
and the figure. So you know, just that massive shift of you know, the toy, what it was and what it is now, and price point. It's just enormous, you know. And, yes, you know, I've got to shout that out because I think that is a massive, you know, chunk that we've missed now in today's market.
So, definitely.
Agreed. You
know. Agreed.
Yeah, what Toy Biz did at the start was, and this is always a challenge for toy companies, is to build in lesser-known characters but keep, you know, selling product.
Yeah.
So you can, you know, get your more obscure characters that people are fans of. So they did that. They started off with more A-grade characters, but then they dabbled in lesser known characters. I think some of the first ones being characters such as Man-Thing, Deathlok, the Young Avengers, and even Vengeance.
Was it a giant size Man-Thing?
And I don't think so.
Oh,
it was just
a
regular size.
Yeah. Oh, good.
But
good.
A bit. That's right. And then, as we've talked about, there were often sort of themes built into the lines.
Yeah.
And you know, this is a really interesting one, as you said, Frank. You might, you know, they might now build a figures are the staple, but they weren't back in the early Toy Biz days, as we talked about. It was more about the bases and the stands and sometimes the vehicles that were thrown in. But is it enough to sway you? I know you're going on a very specific, you know, you're starting, you've started sort of at the start of 2018.
Yep.
You've got whatever it was, 860 figures to collect. Now you're not going to go down all
God
those.
Be with you, Charles.
Woo! But, you know, like the Mantis wave.
Yeah. He was never seen again.
And we've got 850 left to get.
Pretty much.
They're all Deadpool.
Yeah, so mine's an interesting one. I think everybody wants to build a figure stuff. They're very clever in the ones they've chosen. And even with something like Guardians of the Galaxy, the build-a-figure out of that was Mantis, who is one of the more, you know, colourful characters from that sort of, from a very colourful sort of line. Anyway, I've taken the attitude with that of, it's character first.
Yep.
There's enough ways in the secondary market to, you know, pay $5, $8, whatever it is, to get that missing piece you want. I've got, you know, bits and pieces of all sorts. I could make a wonderful hodgepodge of all, you know, of a build-a-figure currently, but I'm not stressing about chasing them because what it means is you then end up with characters similar to a Darkhawk that I'm not a fan of, that just kind of takes up room on the shelf for me.
Yeah.
And so I'm going, I have to have some sort of level of attachment to the character.
First and foremost
for me.
I've got two build-a-figure stories for you, both involving members of my family. Ooh. So my daughter and my wife both collect Marvel Legends, and they collect more Marvel Legends than I do. My daughter is the world's biggest Doctor Strange fan.
Nice.
How a kid of her age decides she loves Doctor Strange, I have no idea, but she goes around proudly telling everybody I loved it before there was a movie.
Right.
So when The Wave came out, she desperately wanted Dormammu. Yes. He was the build-a-figure. Yep. She hadn't bought him at the San Diego exclusive in the Book of Vishanti.
Mm.
So she saved her money and bought a case.
Nice.
That is
bought
awesome.
An entire case of figures and then flipped the characters she didn't want.
Yep.
Took the build-a-figure pieces out, advertised them, and flipped them. Got rid of them all.
Proud dad moment.
Very
proud
dad moment.
Give her a high five for me when you get home.
As opposed to my poor wife, who wanted Okoye from the recent Black Panther wave more than Burning. And of course, we didn't need or want all the figures.
Yeah.
So she went on eBay and paid scalper prices just to get Okoye.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
Which is always the other option.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
To round out the Build-A-Figure concept, just to touch on the history of it. So it began back in 2005, so still under Toy Biz at the time. And in my opinion, this is the perfect use of the concept, right? Definitely. And it started off with all guns blazing. We got Galactus, I think, was the first Build-A-Figure. And these were big.
Massive. You know, 16-inch, I think they were.
Yep.
Something like that. Yeah.
Galactus was beautiful. He was followed by the Sentinel robot. And brilliant, absolutely brilliantly sculpted super badass Apocalypse came after that. I wasn't collecting Marvel Legends at the time. I might pick up, you know, a piece here and there. But when I saw those, you know, the draw to those Build-A-Figures was so strong. Absolutely beautiful.
I almost, back in the day, went to Collectible Chaos and almost bought a whole wave just to get the Apocalypse Build-A-Figure because I thought the Apocalypse was just so damn cool. Like, he is just, I loved him in the X-Men cartoon, and just, I just thought he was so cool. I was very close.
Yeah. Well, this new wave that's just on the precipice of coming out is Apocalypse, same thing. And it's interesting seeing the shot side by side. Some people have obviously already got it, and just sitting it next to the Toy Biz one. Toy Biz one dwarfs it a good inch or so. Like, yeah.
Now, I wrote this down and then I thought I didn't fact check it, so I might need some help on this. But I recall maybe some San Diego Comic-Con exclusives just doing the Build-A-Figure in some cases. I recall a Galactus that was done as a convention exclusive. I'm not sure if Sentinel got redone.
Sentinel and Galactus both got redone because until recently, Galaxy Toys out on Goodwood Road had both still in the boxes available. So, they both got redone. Different paint jobs, though.
Yes. It was also advertised for the 3¾ size Marvel Legends because then you could have Silver Surfer flying, you know, and it almost, you know, it wasn't to scale, but it was closer to scale than a 6-inch Silver Surfer. So,
yep.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, very good. All right. The other thing we probably have to talk about is articulation. So it was a significant part of what made this line. Probably one of the main focuses coming out of Toy Biz and then Hasbro was to build in as much posability as you can. And as Sean mentioned, character-specific posability. So, you know, where it makes sense for characters' shoulders, they put in the extra effort. Finger articulation makes sense for characters like Spider-Man, etc. Figures would often boast the amount of articulation with a little burst on
43 points.
Yeah. quite often they would have more than 30 points of articulation. Mm. And as we talked about in the Toy Biz era, the controversial finger articulation, and as Sean pointed out, the toe articulation as well.
Mm. Probably the one that got me, I've got a few of the old school Toy Biz ones on the shelf there, and it's the Iceman, who's from like Wave 8 or something like that. And he's got like an additional joint in his shoulders that allows him to put his arms out in front of him and almost cross them over. In particular, with the base that he's got, he's you know, as Iceman, classic Iceman does, makes the big ice slide and there's this big blast coming in front of him. You think of, even with ball joints, a lot of characters can't do that. They've actually got, it's like a, I guess you call it a pec articulation, really, that allows a full range of motion. And this was, you know, we're talking 2003, 2004, thereabouts. So, yeah, that one jumps out to me.
Yeah, and I think the Black Panther in the current wave has that butterfly articulation across the shoulders and chest as well. It's something they've done with sort of the more animalistic characters now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, my big 12-inch Deadpool I picked up recently from the Marvel Legends line has that. And I didn't notice it until I started playing with it. I'm like, oh, that's the first figure in my whole collection that has that articulation that can go back and forward with their shoulders.
Shoulders. Excellent.
Yeah. I just found it interesting to think back to what Toy Biz were doing in the early 2000s and compare and contrast it with some of the other collector-centric lines that we had. And I sort of take a snapshot of what NECA and maybe more to the point McFarlane were doing at that era. So there was a huge focus on the sculpting techniques and getting really, really crazy detailed sculpts and likenesses of characters. But one of the things that maybe NECA and McFarlane didn't do well, particularly McFarlane, was on the articulation. It was almost a pre-posed statue with some cuts that you could kind of move, but there was one pose and that was sort of it.
Well, to that extent, that's why I never picked up the 2002 or 2003 X Master Universe line, because my good friend was picking up the Marvel Legends line, had an enormous collection, and the 2003 Masters came out, and I'm like, they're basically statues. Like, if you don't have them in that one pose, what's the good of it, you know? And chalk and cheese. Like, and I'm like, I'm going to pass because the articulation is woeful.
Mm.
So I think they started off really well, and I think it's only improved what we've got to date with the way they're able to pull it off and execute on it. We've talked in other podcasts in our particular episodes on articulation around how now a lot of the paint apps are designed to sort of move with the articulation to give you the best possible
So it doesn't look silly, particularly like a chest or an ab crunch type thing. If they've got a big, you know, for argument's sake, spider logo on their front, if you tilt them backwards and forwards, the paint is actually underneath the joint, so it still looks seamless.
One of the things, just talking about articulation more generally, I think we got some figures from Bandai, I think, in their SH Figure Arts line from the Turtles. Again, with a lot of that seamless sort of shoulder articulation hidden underneath. But one of the things that they did was put weighting in the legs, so metal legs, to give, you know, kicking poses. Yeah. Is that, that's not something in terms of die-cast pieces or parts that we've seen on any Marvel Legends today?
Not to my knowledge.
And look, I guess to that point, these are sort of, what would you call it, $30 figures compared to these SH Figure Arts, which are pushing around the $100 price point. Right, that's another level that some companies are going to.
Yeah, definitely.
But you can see how it's influenced other toy companies. Obviously, Master Universe Classics and DC Universe Classics came after that, and they took both those properties into more articulation territory than they'd ever been before. And so you can sort of see a lot of lines nowadays are standing on the shoulders of what Toy Biz and Hasbro did with Marvel Legends and just trying to push it a little bit further.
Yeah.
All right, the other thing that is a key feature of this line is around the chase figures or the variants. So originally, at the start of Marvel Legends, they used the chase concept of a figure, so to bring in less popular characters or less recognizable characters. And that's where, I guess, a toy manufacturer short packs a particular character, and it might get the term chase figure because it's harder to get. What they seem to do now, looking at, I picked up a Nebula for Frank the other day, and if you actually look at that, it's got Gamora and Nebula on the packaging, and it's almost like they're using that one slot for two characters. Yep. So it's sort
that
of more
a
of
lot
the
with Marvel Legends,
yeah the variant and DC Universe. The multiverse line, I think, does that a little bit as well now. So, and look, it seems to have done quite well because, like we said, we've got a character roster of, you know, 860-odd characters. We've got everyone's able to get their sort of favourite lesser-known characters. But I guess that can be a frustration for collectors if the characters you're after, particularly if they've got a Build-A-Figure parter short-packed. And I think this sort of concept of saying, well, if we do Nebula and Gamora, they'll both come with the same, you know, Build-A-Figure part. So you've still got equal chance of getting that part, I guess, to complete your Build-A-Figure if you want to.
I kind of like how Toy Biz did it back in the early days when it was, I think it was as early as Wave 2, where they had Doctor Doom, and the chase or variant within that was a Doom bot, where Doom's mask could actually come off, and on the regular one, you see his human face. The Doom bot was like a Terminator-esque robot face. Either one, when you put the mask on, you still get your Doctor Doom. But so to me, that doesn't break your collection if you don't get the Doom bot variant type thing. Other ones they did was like the Thing, who came just, you know, regular the Thing, and the other one he had a trench coat and sort of, you know, looking like the 80s Turtles trench coat, hat and sunnies type thing. And and that was, you know, you could take that character either way, to be honest. And that to me is how a variant should be, an entirely different character, Nebula and Gamora. That's a little bit
Back to the variants that my mate collected, like Abominus, he had this patch over his eye, like a growth or something over one eye. You've got Loki, where he had the horns going up or the horns going straight ahead, like Hellboy. Just things like that. You know, I've unmasked Wolverine versus masked Wolverine, Grey Hulk, Green Hulk, you know. Just to shout out a few.
Availability. How has this line been available here in Australia? I know we have often talking to our US friends on Giant Size Team Up Network. We talk a lot about price.
Yeah.
And I guess, you know, walking into a store, you're going to pay, I guess, MSRP $35. It's probably, if you go into a specialty collector store, you might be looking at $40 for a figure. I think you're sort of talking, what, $20?
$20 US.
US, and they're talking about what does that mean when they go up to the 25 US price point? That's sort of inevitable.
Yeah, well, that new price point has actually been floated with the MCU line. That's sort of the 10-year stuff. And they spun it as, oh, it's, you know, movie-accurate paint, so it's hard to do. And then the 3D phase printing. And so people are going, oh, well, all right, so if it's just for the MCU figures, so surely that means the price will go back down once we get back into regular Marvel Legends. And it's not going to
have
go
they
back
not to- met Hasbro before?
Exactly.
have we not done this dance?
You get the impression they've just started collecting today.
Hope springs eternal.
Yes. So, yeah, so the price point is always... Yeah, to me, I unless it's a character I really want, I don't want to pay $40 for one of these brand new. $30 I can live with. And then we talk about price and availability in particular. The exclusive drives me nuts because they're not, as we talked about, you know, thing with a trench coat. It's an entirely new character. Good luck trying to find a Mr. Fantastic here in Australia, because not only is it an exclusive, it's a store exclusive in America to a store that just doesn't exist here.
Yeah. To Walgreens.
Yeah, Walgreens, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, so that, I mean, that definitely goes to availability. I guess if you are willing to shell out some cash up front, there are a number of websites now in Australia where you can pick up cases or whole assortments or a lot of the characters you want ahead of time, sort of lock them in. So I've seen Little Toy Company do that
pre-orders.
Now as pre-orders. But yeah, I find... if you're going to wait for the store, you know, you're going to be talking those higher price points. Mm-hmm. And then you're playing the game of when does it clearance or when is it discounted. Like today I saw a Loki that was discounted down to $17 at Target. So essentially what is half price.
Yep.
And that was, from what I saw from that assortment, he was the peg warmer for that particular assortment.
But then you walk into somewhere like Kmart the other day and they've got the Civil War run and they're selling them for full price. It's like, where have you been hiding these and why have they only just hit the front of your rotation now?
Yeah, that was really strange.
We couldn't work that out. Well, the price I saw on them was $25 in some of the stores.
Okay, no, where I was, it was $35.
Yeah,
still,
right, okay. But yeah, they seem to be moving quite well. But yeah, really odd. That must have been some old stock that's been sitting somewhere in some warehouse.
I reckon it's a room issue, and I reckon getting rid of their DVDs and CDs and creating that space that they talked about for their in-house toys has given them more space for, you know, mainstream toy lines. At least that's the hope. I'm hoping it's just the start of something. If anyone, the powers that be in Kmart Australia happens to hear this, we want more toys.
But rewinding it back to the toy biz, like, they were readily available everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
You could walk into any store, buy them, and as I said before, $15 was the regular retail price, and you pay a little bit more for the variants at collector stores. So, or you could buy the whole wave at, you know, places like Collectible Chaos and things would sell them by the box.
Yeah, and you go to any sort of convention now where they're dealing or selling secondhand toys, Marvel Legends does have a pretty big footprint. You know, you can find a lot of them on the secondary market, but I guess people know the value pretty much in today's day and age, so you will be paying more for the, I guess, the more demanded or more obscure characters.
Mm. Yeah, to that point, at the recent Mega Toy Fair that we were all at, there was a guy there, table just full of Marvel Legends, had a Marvel, you know, shirt on and everything.
Oh, Rick's his name. Rick's been selling Marvel stuff for years. He started buying...
He used to sell DC stuff as well.
He did too, but he started buying for himself, and then he'd do the figures that he wanted to get rid of that he didn't need for the waves. Yeah. And eventually it built up and built up, and he's like, well, I can actually, you know, be the Marvel Legends guy now.
Yeah, he was great. I had a good chat to him and bought quite a lot of stuff. I went back about 3 or 4 times, and his stuff was, you know, reasonably priced. A lot of it was all loose, but it was complete, and I was able to get the actually Medusa exclusive, the Walgreens exclusive that he had for $55, which to me was a good deal compared to, you know, trying to source that online.
Yeah, a friend of mine picked up the Mr. Fantastic from there.
Nice.
Yeah, we were lucky enough to have a Chris Wisdom send over a mystery box to us, which had a couple of, well, pretty much all US exclusives in there. So thank you,
Absolute
Chris, again
legend,
for that.
Chris.
That was great. Okay, we'll wrap just with one final thought. Anything that you want from this line going forward, or do you have any hopes from what it might offer for the latter part of 2018 and beyond?
I just hope it doesn't become all MCU. Don't get me wrong, MCU is a massive presence, and I understand how cross-marketing and all that sort of stuff works. But it comes from the comic books at the end of the day, and I really hope it isn't just, oh, here's, you know, Hydra Goon number two, who was in the background of Infinity War for 30 seconds sort of thing. So I really hope they're, and to Sean's point, you know, give us those really oddball characters that you don't see that often. My particular focus is trying to hunt down a decent set of X-Men, trying to find Emma Frost, and Emma Frost that doesn't look like rubbish, because I think the very first Hasbro one...
Terrible.
It's awful. It's the ugliest female figure you'll ever see.
One of my wife's favourite characters, and the one figure she will not buy.
Exactly.
Like, no, I am not having that in my collection, exactly. Never.
And I think also to your point about the 90s brands or stuff coming back, we're due, yeah, surely, for absolutely a new Emma Frost. So, yeah, I just hope they don't do that. Mm. Beyond that, I don't think they can do any wrong. I think they initially, Hasbro, were a little bit wonky with the articulation and some of the paint apps. They've got their standard window packaging. That packaging is good to go for however long. And I think they've got a nice blend of, you know, the accessories plus your Build-A-Figure. And, yeah, I think they've hit on a winning formula, and I don't see it changing anytime soon.
At the risk of meeting everyone's expectations, I'm going to say a Days of Future Past way for me. I really badly want that. Like I said, you know, some nice-looking figures that sort of capture, you know, the fact that two different actors played a lot of those characters and they're true to that film, which for me just, yeah, you know, my imagination soars every time I watch it, so, you know, I get right into it. So, yeah, that's my ambition. Other than that, I'm probably a bit different to Frank. I'm just collecting the screen stuff, so from Marvel Legends, so I'd probably say, you know, more MCU stuff.
I'm looking forward to the 90s refresh. I think we're going to see characters like Death's Head 1, some of the rarer, more bizarre creatures that came out of the 90s. You know, lots of, you know, guns, lots of pouches. Lots of ridiculousness. And I think that's going to be fun to see how that aesthetic translates into the more staid look of Marvel Legends, because everyone sort of looks a bit homogenous. You know, even the more extreme characters like Deadpool, they find a way to bring them back into looking like the rest of the line. So to see a Cable done that way, to see a Shatterstar done that way, to see Death's Head with his huge tusks and things done that way, that'll be really exciting for me.
I'd like to see a bit more of the exclusives hit our shores. Talking about the two packs and things, we get a very small sprinkling of the two packs and things that you see. What you know, the US have got, they've got, like, you know, Doctor Strange and another person in the two pack, or you know, the Wasp and Ant-Man and things, and we just get a really tiny sprinkling. And shout out, I'd like to get a Stan Lee figure. Like, I know he was in a Build-A-Figure pack or something, but that got cancelled.
There was a Spider-Man one as well, where you could swap him out.
Possibly, maybe. So I've got a bit of a Stan Lee dedicated shelf in the lounge room, and I'd like to add a 6-inch figure that not costing the earth.
Good call. You
know, yeah,
I'd like that too.
Before he, you know, passes away.
Yep.
Touch wood.
Yeah. For me, where there's a lot of toy history, I love it when current lines go back and really give us, you know, really nostalgic versions of those characters from other lines. And I think probably dabbled in there, we do have some sort of retellings of some of the original lines. But, you know, to think, you know, the Sauron figure that's just sort of coming out now, very reminiscent of what Toy Biz did back in the day in their X-Men line, for example. So I'm loving what the Predator line is doing, what Alien's doing, where they're actually going back and doing, you know, Kenner-inspired figures on repro or retro-style cards. And that's what I've cherry-picked from NECA in terms of Alien Predator, are those ones that pay homage or respect to the Kenner stuff. So maybe to see something, I don't know if it'll happen, but to see something that pays direct homage in terms of the figure, the design, the paint apps, and even the packaging would be great.
Lenticular Secret Wars style shields.
Yeah.
There you go. There's the next way.
Yes. Brilliant.
Yep. There you go. There we have it. So that's it. So thanks everyone for that segment on Marvel Legends. We will now head into our next segment.
Riddle me this. Riddle me that. Time to start thinking, because the Quizmaster's back.
And it is the Toy Power Quiz, and Darren is going to take us through a quiz out of his head, like he always seems to do on the podcast. Take it away, Darren.
anything could happen, anything at all, because I don't have my cheat sheet with me. I'm going to start probably with Ben and work the way around, so Sean can get a bit of a feel for how we work, and you know, hopefully I'll remember enough questions to get us to Sean. We'll find out. So Ben, Kim Basinger, or Basinger, depending on how you pronounce the name, famously played Vicky Vale in Tim Burton's Batman film.
Correct.
Who was originally
ding?
Who was originally cast in that role, and why did they leave?
Michelle Pfeiffer. I got no idea, man. Absolutely no clue.
Anyone want to take a stab?
Sean's got his hand up.
Sean Young. She correct. Broke her leg in a horse riding accident for a scene that never ended up being in the final cut of the film, and then turned up in Tim Burton's office when they were filming Batman Returns in a Catwoman suit, demanding the role as recompense.
Sean wins the entire segment and that answer alone, because he knew every bit of it. Well done.
That's great.
So, in continuing the movie theme, so Trent, who was originally cast as Marty McFly in Back to the Future?
Well, it wasn't just originally cast. They actually shot...
They did.
...pretty much the whole film mm-hmm. with him in there.
They did.
So when Michael J. Fox was actually shooting the film, he shot a number of scenes sort of just by himself, and they sort of spliced him in. I don't know the name of the actor.
You don't? Does anyone else?
I know the story, and I can picture the guy. I couldn't tell you his name, though. Oh.
Eric Stoltz.
Correct. Sean wins.
Right, I have no brain for anything but trivia.
I know who I'm inviting to my next quiz night.
Just don't get him the right questions, because I can tell your quizzes are going to be tough.
Maybe.
So, Frank, we're continuing the movie theme again and running with Back to the Future. So, it's a true or false question. Crispin Glover only participated in the filming of the first Back to the Future. True or false? Crispin Glover played George McFly.
Okay. True. Correct. Yes.
And the answer is correct.
Yep.
Very famously recasted with Jeffrey Weissman in the role, and mm-hmm. it was all done with prosthetics
yep.
that they had from the first film.
The only film that Crispin Glover's ever willingly done a sequel to is...
Charlie's Angels.
Correct.
Oh. It's on.
It is. Yeah, it is. That's a funny story. Crispin Glover, we could do a whole...
He's a weird unit. He's a weird unit.
Podcast on him. Very talented guy, though.
Yeah.
But, so Sean, thinking back to I'm just going to pull one out of the air here because I don't remember what I had on my cheat sheet. So, the Kenner Batman Forever movie line.
Yep.
How long did it run? So, think back, the movie came out in 95. What year did the Kenner Batman Forever movie line end?
Batman Forever. So, that's the Val Kilmer film.
Yep, that's right. Came out in 95.
You know, I'm actually going to confess I have no idea. I'd gotten out of Batman collecting by that point. I am unable to help you.
You are now dead to me. Anyone else want to take a stab at that?
It didn't have...
Wouldn't be long.
It didn't have a huge run. I think it would be in the order of 40 to 50 figures.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking there was a pack right towards the end, which was...
Four characters, but 40 to 50 figures.
Yeah.
Sounds tell like you, Kenner.
Tell you how many variants of Batman there were. There was a Guardians of Gotham 2-pack right towards the end, and maybe it wasn't towards the end, but that gave us probably the most accurate representations of
that's
Batman
true. It wasn't
and
quite
Robin.
Towards the end. The second 2-pack, the one, the Two-Faced Riddler one, was... Closer
was closer to the end. I think I'm thinking it ran probably 95, 96. It might have wrapped up in 97, but if I had to lock it in, I would say 96.
Yeah.
And you are correct.
Does that make it one of the shorter Batman runs?
It probably would.
Yeah.
It probably would, but then again, movie lines generally end the year after the film.
Where are we at? Back to Ben.
We're back to Ben. And the question I have for you, my friend, is so the Robin Hood Prince of Thieves line by Kenner, what year did that come out?
Same year as the movie.
That's right. And the year would be...
In the 90s?
It was in the 90s.
That would be the decade.
Getting closer.
You're getting very warm.
93?
Not as warm as you'd like.
Nah.
You learned that technique from Davey, didn't you?
374. No, I don't know, Ben.
Anyone else want to take a shot?
I thought it was 91.
And what about anyone else?
I would have said in 92, early 90s.
I would lock in 91 if I were you, Trent, because you're right.
Well done, man.
So, Trent, for you, the question that I have is, how many figures were released in the Back to the Future Funko line?
I do not know, but we certainly got Marty, we certainly got Doc. Pretty sure we got George McFly. I'd have to say it's in the order of between 5 and 6. I'm going to lock in even number. I'm going to say 6.
I believe the answer was 4, but maybe you know something I don't. I believe the answer is Marty, Doc, George, and Biff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Usually Funko do a few more than that, so I was just hedging my bets.
Yeah, no,
they're really probably the only 4 I could recall. So.
I heard they were going to do a second wave, but it hasn't materialised, at least.
That's the reaction line, I dare say, we're talking about.
Yeah, we reaction, are. Sorry. Yeah. My mistake. Yeah, the Funko reaction line, yeah. So, Frank, how many figures were released in the Vintage Master Universe line?
I swore you were going to say Marvel Legends there for a second.
Trent's already told us.
So in
this very episode, that would...
What was your actual question?
How many figures were released in the Vintage Master Universe line?
Oh, I know everyone else in the room here knows that off by heart, but... Sure, Sean shaking his head.
No, I do not.
I know it's in the order of... the high 60s.
Yeah.
I'm going to take a stab and say 68.
You're pretty close.
I would say... Oh, do you want to have a go, Ben?
It depends if you count, you know, the variants of Dolph Lundgren's head or, you know, if the laser half power
don't, is skeletal. Don't count the variant of Dolph.
67, I think it is, isn't it?
I think you go 69, but if you count Faker...
If you can't count Faker 1 and Faker 2, which is a different sculpt, it's the Thunder Punch He-Man. Yeah.
It gets controversial.
It is very controversial.
69 to 70. Yeah. I'd say 70 if you count fake.
Yeah, I don't reckon you could fault anyone that said probably 68, 69 or 70. So I'm going to give it to you.
All right.
It's amazing when you think how small those lines, those iconic lines really are, like Kenner's Star Wars and Masters of the Universe, when you look at something like we were just talking about Marvel Legends and how expansive that is, how different the market is.
Mm.
And Sean... Speaking of those iconic lines, a Kenner question. How many figures were released in store on card for Kenner's Superpowers line?
Somehow knew you were going to say that. All right.
It's a line that's near and dear to my heart. What can I say?
Yeah, mine too. But
in card and in store.
In card and in store. So you've got to exclude.
So we're excluding Clark Kent.
You exclude Clark Kent. You exclude the Riddler because that was the...
The Argentinian Super thing. Amigos.
First wave... First wave 12, second wave 16, third wave 11.
I reckon there's.
I reckon you're pretty warm.
It's an odd number.
Yeah, do you want to? Yeah, I reckon you're pretty warm. You want to lock in?
Yeah, I'll lock that in. I think that's my memory.
What's
I know
the maths on that?
Yeah, I don't know what the maths. Don't ask me to do maths. I'm a journalist. I didn't get into this business to count, Trent.
That's right. Treat your numbers men for that. I'm like you. I'm a social worker. We don't work with numbers.
Yeah, I reckon it's 12, 16, and 11. For some reason that sounds right. Like, you know, the proportions you don't want on your own body, 12, 16, 11.
So what is that?
37, is it?
I've got 35 in my head.
And I've got 33 in my head and on the back of the card.
Can't argue with that.
Yeah, so I'm not a mathematician. Trent did... 12, 11, 17.
I think that gets you 41.
There's someone out there that's listening to this going, just get a calculator.
That's right. Well, the answer is 33. We can't really say a guest got it wrong, like Ken Winger. It's just not
good
manners.
Of course you can.
So next question is to Ben, and it's a nice, easy one.
I hope. I'll be the...
I'll be the judge of that.
It's a nice, easy one. What year did the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Next Mutation line or Ninja Turtles... It is easy.
Begin or end?
Begin.
They weren't far apart, in fairness.
97,
is it?
Yes. Yeah. See, it was easy. You got it. You smashed
poor guy sweating.
Yeah.
I was quickly on Google.
And Trini gets the part two of that. What year did the Ninja Turtles Next Mutation line end?
I reckon
I might have asked that.
I think we've had this before.
No, it wasn't a year, it was 6 months after.
It was the moment Venus stepped onto screen.
Yeah.
I'm Wave 1, yeah, that's really when it ended. But...
And Peter Laird lost his mind.
Yes. There's still new stock coming into stores for a while, believe it or not.
Yeah, I have a feeling the answer to this is 1999.
No.
98, is it?
98, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
And I think they did really well to get to 98. 1 year.
If you've ever seen the show, don't.
Don't rewatch it.
It's just not painful. Good.
There's two shows I'll never watch. Is that and New Adventures He-Man. I just
New Adventures of He-Man's awesome. Adam's trialed as a war criminal for being a deserter. Yeah. I mean, you know, there's consequences to He-Man that's never explored in any other series.
I have trouble watching the Filmation episode, so I just want to leave the anything worse than that. Yeah. So
I reckon this could bring us pretty close to the end of the quiz. So, the sequel to Masters of the Universe, that the aborted sequel that never happened, what was that going to be titled?
Titled?
Oh, God, I don't even think it got that far.
Oh, I did.
He-Man 2, The Return of Skeletor, or something cheesy like that? I have no idea.
He-Man 2, The Quarterback Returns?
Very close. Anyone know the answer to that?
No.
I'm stunned.
No. Masters of the Universe 2.
Yep.
Cyborg.
Something. Yes. Yes. Masters of the Universe 2. Cyborg.
Legit. That's what
legit.
It was.
Legit. Or the Cyborg, actually. Masters of the Universe 2, the Cyborg. But yeah.
He-Man was going to fight a robot and we didn't get to see that.
He was going to be a quarterback in disguise, essentially on Earth.
Flash. That's,
That's right. And if you thought the film we got was low budget at $17 million, I'm going to make it for $6 million.
Yeah.
So wait, did DC get involved and said, "Oh, a cyborg quarterback? Are you serious? I'm sorry, that's taken."
Yep, we've done it.
No, I think just Canon went out of business.
Yeah.
Well, they went. They had just enough time to actually do the Jean-Claude Van Damme film Cyborg.
Using the sets that they had built for Masters of the Universe 2.
I don't think the story was that. It was just the set pieces and the costumes that were used in the film. So it wasn't... Yeah, and it's terrible. I couldn't watch it.
It's hard to watch.
For the sheer fact that the costumes were in it. But the actual film itself is so bad. Like, so bad.
Without Courtney Cox to soothe the blow, it's unwatchable.
Tom Paris, man. Tom Paris is pretty watchable.
Yeah, okay.
Moving right along. Sorry.
All right, last question.
So last question is something along the lines of what year did Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 3 get released at cinemas?
Right now, old Trenchy is screaming at me because he loves that film and I'm not going to be able to answer it properly. Was it as late as 91?
It was later
than 91.
Yeah, 91 was The Secret of the Ooze.
Okay, so 93?
93 is it.
Yep. Hey,
correct. Well,
very good.
Look at our guest one.
Yeah, I reckon without telling scores, I think you were the clear winner, Sean. So,
I've got a quick question for the crew about Marvel Legends.
Yeah.
What Toy Biz Marvel Legend figure, loose, is the most expensive? Toy Biz Marvel Legend of the Marvel Legend universe, so including the Spider-Man and such, which one is loose is the most expensive?
Unmasked Venom?
No. Okay. Not that I... Yeah.
I would have said Puck, but he is actually Hasbro.
No. Give up. Dragon Man from the Fantastic Four.
Oh, God.
So he goes for well over $400.
Yeah, really?
Right. Yeah. Loose.
Wowzers.
Do you know why that is? Is that because he was short, yeah.
Short released, a very E-grade character, I suppose, you know, in the tiers. I think he got a Toy Biz way back in the 80s sort of figure, and then he's got that Marvel Legend.
And that's it.
He's like got two figures for his whole... And he's extremely impressive from what I've been told.
Okay.
He's like a miniature statue, like with articulation. He is just outstanding.
Wicked.
And he's just so super sought after.
I bet he is, yeah.
Yeah, so...
Ticks all the boxes.
Mm. Fair enough. Very good. Yeah.
Very good.
That was my whole research.
Yeah. No,
you've done well. Thank you for your patience on that quiz, gentlemen, particularly as I sort of fumbled my way through not having my cheat sheet of questions in front of me.
Yeah, which is what any normal person would have when they're doing a quiz. No one would attempt to do one out of their head.
I actually had it on the couch. I just didn't put it in my bag.
Sorry, I'll do, Darren, is I'll edit out all the long pauses in between words so it sounds really seamless.
Yeah,
please do.
And edit that bit out too. Oh, paradox.
Look at this. Nice. On that note, we'll wrap this episode. But before we do, huge thank you to Sean for coming in for this episode.
Gents, thank you for having me.
That was brilliant. Where can our listeners find out more about you?
Yeah, absolutely. You can check me out on facebook.com/SeanFewster, which is SeanFewster. Twitter at Sean Fewster, Instagram at Sean_Fewster, because that's the way it rolls sometimes. For the best news in Adelaide, advertiser.com.au, where you'll read all my true crime stuff, truecrimeaustralia.com.au, where you'll read more of my true crime stuff, and riotcitywrestling.com and worldserieswrestling.com to hear me commentate professional wrestling.
So just on that, to dig a little bit deeper, so with the work for the Advertiser, so you're working as one of the senior court reporters?
Yeah, I think they call me the chief court reporter. Chief. So I tend to figure out what we're doing for the week and set our agendas and things like that, and cover everything from Adelaide's warring ninja clans and doomsday cults all the way up to the serial killers and the real serious stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And just on that, so you know your Adelaide crime pretty well. Any books that have been released by you? Anything on the best-selling list as well?
Yeah. I was fortunate enough to write a book a few years ago called City of Evil, The Truth About Adelaide's Strange and Violent Underbelly. That's still available now on iBooks and iTunes, and I think Dimmicks in the City has got copies. Yep. You can pick it up on Amazon as well. And, that's done pretty well for me, so that's still out there.
Yeah, nice. Excellent. That's great.
Awesome,
and
congrats.
Yeah, that's awesome to have someone of that caliber here sitting in the room with us.
Someone who's got a real job.
Yeah, that's right. And on the wrestling, so what's the last thing you've done in wrestling in terms of hosting or commentating for Riot City?
So Riot City, we had a show couple of weeks ago, probably not by the time this airs. We had our and we've got another show coming up soon, but our most recent show was Super Clash at HQ Complex in the city. You can watch that on YouTube via Riot City's YouTube channel. And before that, World Series Wrestling had its first ever pay-per-view, which meant it was the first ever pay-per-view to emanate from Australia and be screened globally. So we had an audience in the tens of thousands watching from around the world on fightnetwork.com, watching the best in Australian wrestling take on the best in international wrestling right here in Adelaide. And I was fortunate enough to be asked to commentate, and that was a tremendous experience, a big honor to be on that program.
That's brilliant.
Very cool.
Very good. Quite often when you get down to some of the cons, I think Supernova, those sort of things often have a wrestling ring.
They do. That's usually Riot City Wrestling in there. Yeah. Yep, that's right.
So definitely if you're down in Adelaide and you're checking out the con, definitely check out the wrestling, because it's pretty amazing. Some very talented professionals that get up and do that stuff, and to actually see it live is amazing to see what those people do. Yeah,
it's great fun. Great fun.
Awesome. So thank you so much again, Sean, for
coming
on.
It's been
great having you on. On that note, we'll say a massive thank you to all our listeners for tuning into another episode of Toy Power, and a special shout out to our Patreons, Chris Wisdom, Lux Toy Collector, Jose Gonzalez, and Brett G. On that note, we'll say see you around the toy aisles.
Thank you one and all, and until next time, good journey.
You can find the Toy Power team at all the usual online places. Facebook.com/ToyPowerPodcast. At Toy Power Podcast on both Twitter and Instagram, or have your say and email us toypowerpodcast@gmail.com. Subscribe to the show on both iTunes and Stitcher, and please leave us a review. Otherwise, we just assume we're awesome.
We are a proud member of the Giant Size Team Up Network. Check out all the awesome shows on this awesome network full of okay people. Want to learn more? Go to GiantSizeTeamUp.com, where you can find us and a whole lot more awesome shows. Well, they're not more awesome than us, but yeah.